So there was a girl who lived in the forest, and she was getting ready for her wedding. She had many final arrangements to make that day. She needed to go see the cake maker, the dressmaker. She also needed to go see the priest and go through her vows. Finally, in the evening, she would meet with her beloved. They would have tea, and they would revel in the wonderful celebration that was to be tomorrow. And then she would finally be in the arms of her beloved. She was overflowing with joy. But her mind was also very busy with her checklist. And so she set out to meet that first appointment, which was to the cake maker. But not very far into the forest, she was met with a surprise. A lion, who was face to face with her, so close she could hear his breath. And in that moment, the cake maker was gone. The dressmaker nowhere to be seen. Even the priest had dissolved. Even her beloved was not present. There was no time. There was no past, there was no future, there was no intention. And the teacher ends the story by saying, "Welcome the lion on your path." Now, we've had some lions on our path, haven't we, in the last year or so? I know collectively we can name quite a few, and maybe personally you might have some too. Collectively, of course, we've been dealing with the pandemic and all the things that are a part of that. You know, we were going about life with our busy checklist, right? The things that we had to do. And then suddenly, oh, we need to stay at home. We need to wear masks. We need to keep distance. Some people even were laid off from their jobs or completely lost their jobs. Some had to be brave and go out there on the front lines every day. So there was lots and lots of things to deal with. Lots of, if you will, lions on our path. There were others, of course, too. Just, you know, this weekend is the anniversary of George Floyd's killing on Memorial Day. And that shook us to our core, that caused protests worldwide and all kinds of social unrest and awakening that occurred. Not part of our regular routine, our checklist, our plans. And so many other things that might have occurred for you as well. Then we got around to this year, and January 6th, many of us couldn't believe our eyes that suddenly there was an insurrection at our Capitol, and people were scaling the walls of the Capitol. All these surprises, all these shocks, like lions on our path. And then, in those moments, we become present to what is right now. But that lion, that roaring of the lion, right, shakes us out of our sleepwalking, awakens us. That's why the teacher says, "Welcome the lion." It's the aliveness of the now moment. In this series, we're mastering the art of certainty. And as we master the art of certainty, we accept the fact that change is natural to life. Even surprises are natural to life. And with it, we become aware that feelings of uncertainty are inevitable, and we make friends with that as well. They are not our enemy. These surprises, these feelings are not our enemy. And so we don't resist them. We welcome them. We allow them. We see the gifts that are brought to us, the spiritual gifts, the opportunities that are here for us. And one of these gifts is packaged as the presence, also known as the present or the now. While it's often said that nothing stays the same except for change, it can also be said that one constant we can count on is it's always now. It's now, now, right? And now, and now. And so that now, that moment, that present moment is an opportunity for us to access the underlying presence. But like that young girl, I don't know about you, but I'm very much like her, in that I tend to live as if this moment is an obstacle to the next. It's an obstacle to get through to some future moment, to some future place. if you feel like you that future moment that you need to get to is more important than this one, then we miss the fullness of life that is offered to us. Eckhart Tolle, the author of The Power of Now, amongst other books, says that almost everyone lives like this, and it's a super dysfunctional way to live. He said that we live this way, but then the future never actually arrives because it's always now. It's always present. So in the present moment, the future arrives, and then it's now. Does that make sense? When we live for the imagined future, we generate a constant undercurrent of unease, of tension, of discord. But when our attention moves to the present moment, to what is here and now, we become alert, as if we've just woken up from a dream. Our mind is alert. Our mind is focused. Our heart might be more open. Our body is present. And so that alertness, that waking, is the waking of the dream that we have dreamt, that we have created, the thought dream that we have made. And when we wake up, there's clarity, there's simplicity. And we get to enjoy the moment just as it is. Not something to get through, not something to fix, not something to change, just enjoying it just as it is. So when we live in the present like this, anxiety melts away. Something that, you know, I don't know what the psychological studies are saying, but I know what my intuition says, and probably yours too. Anxiety levels have gone through the roof in recent years in our society. But the presence, the practice of the presence, will bring them back down, will allow them to melt away. And we can feel then at home wherever we are. That sense of home is a sense of peace. It's a sense of contentment. It's a sense of relaxation. It's easy to confuse the now moment with the content of the moment. But it's a really important distinction to make. Because there is content, of course, in any given moment. I mean, right now, when I become aware my hands are moving. I become aware my feet are solid on the ground. I become aware that there's a camera in front of me, and that in my mind, I know that you're on the other side of the camera. Right behind the camera, though, is Peter, who's operating the camera today. And so we become then more aware of the content of what is happening around us. That's kind of a step into the fullness of presence. We slow it down and we become more aware of the details, the sounds, the sights, the sensations, the feelings. But what we're really tuning into in the now, what we're really referring to, is the divine presence through which all of these things spring and are animated and move. And so it's that we're looking toward. You know, when we say my life, we're usually referring to something that we have constructed, a kind of identity maybe, or circumstances in our lives that we've created out of our thoughts and our perceptions and our feelings. And then we put it all together and we say, that's my life. Or we say, this is me. I am this sort of identity that we've created, a personality, and it all comes out of these perceptions and thoughts and feelings of how we want to be and who we think we are. But none of that is really the truth of life. Life with the big L, right? The life that is the underlying presence that animates us. That's the life that we're accessing when we get present. That's the true life, the one pulsating life of the universe, the heartbeat of the universe, the breath of God breathing us. That's what where we go when we move through the content to this deeper understanding of presence. And for ourselves, for who we are in truth, we move into that I am truth. That's the true self, right? The ultimate self. That is an unchanging self. It can be different aspects of that one I am. But it is I am the presence. I am the power. I am the consciousness. I am. And so as we say these things to ourselves, these kind of affirmative statements, this is a practice that helps us shift into what is true. What is me? What is life? So maybe you want to say some of those. I am consciousness. I am presence. I am life. I am. Any of those will help you shift. If you're having a difficult day, if you're mired in what you would consider a problem, if you're getting upset on the highway or in the grocery store line, you know, you can just say, remind yourself, I am. I am. I am consciousness. I am kindness. I am presence. And it can allow you to shift then into what is here now, that divine truth of who we are. There's untold power in this power of now as we begin to unpack it a little bit and steep in it a little bit more. And Faith Rivera, bless her heart, has a song that is right on cue, actually called Power of Now. Let's take a look.
Power of now.
So we know when we access this power of now, we know when, right? Now. But how do we access the power of now? That's always the question, isn't it? How do we work the spiritual principle? How do we practice it so it can become a part of our everyday lives? Well, there's one thing that's super easy that you have with you all the time, as long as you're alive, your breath. In every meditator's toolkit is the breath, because it's something that we can anchor in, we can go back to, we can see, we can use, we can expand energy, we can expand the body, we can open up the heart, we can relax the mind. The breath is our friend. And paying close attention to it, being conscious of the breath, is a gateway to greater mindfulness and to access this divine presence we're talking about today. And so if you've, a lot of times if we check in, well, it's not that we've forgotten to breathe exactly, but sometimes you kind of, if you're feeling tense, there's sort of that sense of holding your breath or just breathing maybe more shallowly than is great for you. So just tune in for a minute now that I'm talking about it and see kind of what's happening in your breath. And so let's take a nice, conscious, deep breath together. How's that feel? You might notice that you feel maybe more relaxed, more open. Sometimes taking maybe one or two or three of those can shift everything. So when you notice yourself feeling tense, maybe in the midst of conflict, you don't like somebody just said something to you that you're having a reaction to, just by taking a breath, you can begin to access the presence. And then everything shifts. Also, maybe your response. Brenly, my partner, loves to create. And for a while there, she was creating barnyard signs out of old barn wood from the ranch that we used to live on. And she created this one for me that's based on a Thich Nhat Hanh quote. It's so simple, as Thich Nhat Hanh has a way of being very concise and wise. It says, breathe in, period. Breathe out, period. Smile. Now, when we give gifts to someone, sometimes we get to be the beneficiaries of that as well, right? So by giving me that sign, it's not only a benefit to me, but it's a great benefit to my partner that I follow the sign, right? And so try it with me. Let's breathe in. And when you smile, you can smile big, or you can just smile what feels natural right now, which might be more like a hint of a smile. So breathing in, breathing out, and smile. Feels good. Like when you even just smile on your, they say like the, hundreds of muscles I think it takes to smile, it kind of creates that smile in the whole body, or the smile in the heart. These are such simple ways for us to begin to slow down, to pause, and to access this divine presence that sometimes might feel elusive, yet is just right here, a breath away. Another thing that we can do is just through the observation in nature of different things can begin to bring us into this more open and alert state. The other day, I was just sitting out in the middle of our yard, and I just started looking up, and the clouds were drifting by. And I spent about 10 minutes just looking at the sky, watching the clouds move around, and they would come together, and then they'd come apart, and then there was that vast sky behind the clouds. And it was the most relaxing thing. I felt so content and so at peace. Such a simple thing. Pema Chodron says in her book, Living Beautifully with Uncertainty and Change, that the true nature of mind is vast sky, and thoughts and emotions are the clouds that obscure it. So with that in mind, if you begin to think of say, in meditation practice or just in a moment like that where you may be sitting outside, you can begin to be the witness to the cloud thoughts as they go by. Instead of hooking in, I wasn't hooking into the clouds when I was watching them. I wasn't getting attached to them. I wasn't telling a story. I was just watching them fall apart. And that's what happens. If we just watch our thoughts instead of hooking into them and getting attached and creating a storyline, we watch how they just sort of drift apart and dissolve. And then guess what? We get to see the vast sky of divine mind. We get to feel ourselves as a part of that, connected to the divine intelligence of the universe, one with it, in fact. So breathing, observing nature and thought are among these practices that help us access the presence. But that's half the equation, right? Accessing it is half of it. And then it's living it. It's living from it, right? It's almost like we just did the Buddhist side of teachings, the Eastern philosophy, and now we're going into the West. We're going into our new thought teachings. It's living it, right? We got to live from that presence, speak from that presence, act from that presence. We have to access it first. You have to slow down and get quiet to access it first. But then we can show up in this way. The Sufi poet meets us right in the middle, Rumi. He says, meets us in the middle of East and West, I mean. He says, only let the moving waters calm down, and the sun and the moon will be reflected on the surface of your being. Only let the moving waters calm down, the moving waters of thought. Let them calm down, and then you will be luminous, shining the divine light, nothing obscuring the vastness of who you are in truth. We show up luminous when we've calmed down these waters, and that is accessing the presence. But then we also become aware of the presence. We begin to feel the presence, and we begin to then live it, embody it. Keep in touch with that feeling, that awareness in the midst of our activity, in the midst of our listening, in the midst of our speaking, in the midst of everything that we do in a lifetime, in a day. Practicing mindfulness helps us to be more skillful in the ways that we show up in the way, more skillful in our speech, more skillful in our actions. Shantideva says this. He offers this sage advice with, I feel like, a little humor, especially at the end, but don't race to the end yet. When the mind is wild with mockery and filled with pride and haughty arrogance, and when you want to show the hidden faults of others, to bring up old dissensions or to act deceitfully, and when you want to fish for praise or criticize and spoil another's name, or use harsh language sparring for a fight, it's then like a log you should remain. I just love that. It just makes me giggle, and I have to remind myself to remain like a log sometimes. Maybe you do too. So I imagine many of you, like me, love words. You know, maybe you like to read, you like to listen to speeches or talks, you like to give talks, you like to write yourself. The love of the written word is something that's really common in our Western society. And yet it tends to fill our minds with a lot of information. So it's not that to access presence we have to give up our love of the written word or our engagement in it. But instead, if we tune into the spaces between the words, Eckhart Tolle talks about his books. He says the spaces between the words he has written are more important or just as important as the words themselves. And so it is with the spaciousness that we move into that presence. We realize that the space, the nothingness, is the space out of which the manifestation happens, right? So it's out of the pause that the right words come, or that the listening happens. It's out of that space between that launches into the co-creation that we want. If we don't have any spaciousness between thought or words, we're probably not going to have very clear thinking or very skillful words. So this aspect of spaciousness is really important. It's how the words will then arise out of the presence. It's also how we will listen with ears and a heart through the presence. Because the heart is a part of this too. It's not all about work with the mind, right? When we access presence, there is a sense of the sacredness of life that gets accessed. We recognize the sacredness in our hearts, and we feel gratitude for that. Our goddaughter Grace is visiting this weekend, and the first thing she did as soon as she jumped out of the car was she ran to us with this little plant, and she said, "I sprouted a bean." And she says, "I have this bean plant. Can we put it in the garden this weekend?" And we were, you know, of course, all excited about that. And then she told us this fact, like it was something that we would have never, ever heard of, something I imagine she learned in school. And she said, "When plants breathe out, we breathe in what they breathe out. And when we breathe out, the plants breathe in what we breathe out." And we were all just sitting there marveling in the wonder of that, that we need the plants and the trees, and they need us. And that to plant this bean plant this weekend was a gift of life to us, and maybe to the bean as well. And so as we were in that sort of wonder, that childlike wonder, it just deepened into a sense of gratitude and looking around and noticing all the plants and the trees and the greenery around us, and wondering quietly and maybe silently within each of our hearts and minds, at the sacredness of that, of that symbiotic relationship, of the miracle of that, really. We're so grateful as we were all sharing some pizza together. And I was thinking about how, as wonderful as pizza is, the sacredness we had just shared, the marveling, the wonder, the gratitude, was far more fulfilling. It reminded me of when Jesus' disciples came to him and wanted to, you know, "Aren't you hungry? Don't you?" Well, they didn't say that exactly, but, you know, they went to get him food. And he said, "I have food that you know not of." This is the kind of food he was speaking of, spiritual food, food for the heart, food that knows that life is sacred and that feels that overflowing sense of wonder and gratitude. That's that reverence aspect of this. So the presence is practiced through the mindfulness, through the quieting of the mind, through the breath, through the affirmations, mantras, whatever practices we might use to get better at mindfulness. But then it is felt in the heart, and it is experienced right now, right in this moment. It's felt and seen as the miracle of breath. So mindfulness gives way to reverence, and both help us access and experience and live the presence. There was a middle school class. The teacher had asked the kids that day to make a list of the 7 wonders of the world. The kids all had slight differentiations on their lists, as any of us maybe asked that question would have, but they were supposed to list what was current. And so as the teacher was moving around the class and picking up the list, she named some of the things that she saw repeated on the list. Things like the Great Pyramids of Egypt or the Great Wall of China, the Grand Canyon in our own country. And these types of things that are kind of a common that we understand. The Taj Mahal was one of them as well. But she noticed that there was a young girl in the back of the class who hadn't finished her list yet. And so she said, "Oh, do you need a little more time to finish your list?" She said, "Yeah, I'm just having a really hard time making up my mind. I mean, there's so many." And she said, "Well, why don't you read us what you have, and then we can all maybe help you out." She was a little hesitant, but she decided to go ahead and read it. And so she began. To touch, to taste, to see, to hear, to laugh, to love. The classroom was so quiet, you could hear a pin drop. Nobody needed to help that list. It's the things that we overlook as too simple, as too mundane, that are often the most profound and bring forth the most profound joys. It's the things that we take for granted, but when we live in the presence of these wonders, when we notice them and we feel them, we become again filled with that kind of reverence and wonder like a child again. We re-enter the sacredness of life and feel the gratitude and the fullness of what's available to us in these moments to touch, to taste, to laugh. What a gift. So the more we live in the now, the more we experience a sort of profound joy of the simple things in life. When Eckhart Tolle's students tell him about all the problems they have in life, he encourages them from inside the now to ask again, but what is the problem now? Huh. Well, here's the breath. Here I am sitting. Here's that presence. Nothing, right? Even in the midst of something like a pandemic, what is the problem now? Well, suddenly those feelings of uncertainty aren't such a problem anymore. Suddenly the worries and the concerns that we have about sickness or even bodily death, they sort of dissolve. Because we're present in the now, all of that is a future construction of fear. And so in the now, there is no problem, ever. Once we drop into the presence, we are attuned again to that everlasting life, the connectedness, the alertness, the aliveness, the peace, the contentment. Feelings of uncertainty are because we fear what comes, of course, and no matter what arises now, we recognize in the content of our lives that it can arise out of that presence. It's just about shifting just a little bit, a breath, a moment. So it seems true that the one constant in life is change, and also true that in capital L life anyway, it is always, always now. And so even in the midst of uncertainty, we can be present, and this is our pathway to peace. I am at peace in the presence right now. Let's say that together. I am at peace in the presence right now, and so it is.